Failure is a step closer to success. You're listening to episode 12 of Learn With Us. I'm Nikos.
And I'm Ken. Learn With Us is a podcast for developers that want to be better programmers. Hey, how you doing, Nikos?
Hey, I'm good, Ken. How are you?
I'm great. We got a special guest today.
Indeed.
Our guest, this is Ryan Brown. And Ryan is, runs a site called Serverless Code. Mm-hmm. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and give a little quick introduction to you and how you got started in serverless code, and we'll jump in.
All right. Thanks, Ken. So Serverless Code is a blog where I sort of record my own educational process on serverless and working with AWS and all that stuff. My background is primarily as an operator on AWS, and I've sort of slowly moved closer and closer to developer as time goes on. And this site about serverless has helped me sort of push myself towards more of an application developer sort of role.
Sweet.
Nice. So what made you jump into serverless and Lambda?
So it was initially as a kind of a lark because I saw the developer preview sign up and it sounded interesting because I liked the idea of being able to just run code because I had a big directory full of little command line tools, little this and that's that would do small tasks in AWS for me. And my first project was actually building a thing that would run a static site generator. So Hugo in my case, because that was my was and is my favorite static site generator.
What's Hugo built in?
Hugo's written in Go, hence the Hugo.
Nice.
And so what that would do is take all of my static files out of S3, pull them into the Lambda function, and then run Hugo to generate the site, and then dump it back out to S3. And that was my first Lambda project, and I just really, really enjoyed it because I could then have it hooked up in a consistent way, no matter what workstation I'm on, and then also take advantage of the static hosting through things like CloudFront, so I could have a fully static site that could handle any level of traffic, you know, anywhere from 0 to 2 of my visitors on my blog, right?
Nice.
So using the static files and then having Lambda do all of the generation and the smarts.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, so how did you start with serverless, and in particular, moving on to the serverless framework?
So when I started, obviously, the serverless framework didn't exist, but the way that I started was primarily by writing my own little shell scripts around the AWS command line tool and using just standard Python 2.7, which was one of the runtimes available at the time, or using the Node.js runtime. And then zipping up my code and deploying it. A lot of it was upload, try it, have it break. Upload, try it, have it break. And then eventually arrive.
Process.
That's a nice way to put it. You could also say always broken, but that's sort of how I started, was just building my own really simple shell scripts and building small applications like that one to run the static site generator, to add a little bit of smarts to auto-scaling groups because Lambda can take SNS messages, and then those SNS messages can be generated by another service like auto-scaling, so you can do something smarter than the built-in AWS behavior.
Right, so you've done that for maybe a couple of years, then the serverless framework came out?
It was less than a couple of years, I think, because I think the serverless framework was maybe middle of 2015, something like that. It was originally called JAWS, and then it went through a rename, and it's a whole thing. But when the serverless framework came out, that took out a lot of custom tools that I'd built for myself, which I was very happy to get rid of because there are a lot of people out there that are better at developing tools than I am. And being able to kind of bounce ideas off people in the serverless community was really, really nice. And so now I contribute to that and then obviously use the serverless framework a lot as well.
How did you get onto the serverless framework bandwagon?
It was really random. I just found the announcement post from Austin, who's now the CEO of their company, but initially had just written it for himself on Hacker News. And I liked where he was going with it because it was really focused on getting APIs going. And then kind of secondarily, as the framework grew, it added more and more event sources. So you could add support for SNS events, you could add support for other things. But initially it was really focused on, I want to write a whole web application without having any web server at all, which I thought was a really, really cool idea. And it hadn't really been all that popular yet, but I felt like that was where it was going. And so API Gateway started to exist, and secondary things like DynamoDB became easier and easier to use. And eventually you can just run a whole web application without running any EC2 instances yourself at all. And being able to not run any EC2 instances, you do less work kind of as an operator. And so to me, I saw a lot of work that I had to do just go away entirely. And so I wanted to focus higher up the stack, so writing more application code.
Okay. And what is the what sort of things do you use the simple network service for?
It's not simple. It's simple service. And it sort of acts as a connecting messaging system between all kinds of things. So auto-scaling groups, for example, can produce SNS messages. You can make them yourself, so you can send your own messages. You can also have them send out to email. And a bunch of other AWS services use SNS to let you know that something has happened.
Okay.
And so being able to hang Lambda functions off of SNS means that you can insert your own custom code like anywhere, and it's really cool.
All right.
Cool. So where in the market have things been changing most lately, and why should people be paying attention to serverless instead of containers?
Yeah, I think the biggest change has been the just huge number of new kind of tools and practices that have been coming out. So ever since Lambda, there have been monitoring services, there have been new function as a service offerings. So kind of competitors to Lambda from Google, Azure, and a bunch of much smaller companies have all been coming out with competitors. And so it can be hard to cut through, like, how is this relevant to me? But there's a lot of really good tools out there for observability, as well as a lot of great plugins for writing Lambda functions that are commonly reused. So there's a lot of libraries for using them for custom resources, for web applications. There's even some frameworks that let you take an existing Django application and run it inside of Lambda without code changes.
Wow.
So the big thing is just watching the ecosystem mature and seeing just how much things have changed.
Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to get started today on serverless, are there any good starter projects you're aware of?
I think that the big thing is to try and find a problem that you have, even if it's kind of silly. So there's a lot of tutorials out there that will make you a to-do list application, you know, like to-do MVC. But what's important is to find something that you're actually going to want to use and improve. So if you're really into something like gardening, maybe you could make a little like tracking notebook for your watering schedule and fertilizer regimens or whatever it is. And just keep it simple, like a pretty traditional MVC application. So you have a front end that then would call back to your Lambda API gateway setup that would then store data in like a DynamoDB or similar, depending on what service that you want to use. And so the important thing is to pick something that's like a good scope for you to learn on without being so small that it's useless, because you want to keep yourself kind of interested and going on that.
Cool. So aside from the starter projects, are there any good resources like websites or books that could help beginners get started?
Yeah, that's another thing that's gotten really, really, really good in the past year. Is a lot of new books have come out, like a developer evangelist from AWS has a book published with Manning. The founders of A Cloud Guru actually have a book as well. A Cloud Guru is a cloud training company, and their entire business is actually built on Lambda and API Gateway. So they don't run any EC2 instances at all, but they're running this huge training company just off of CDN services, Lambda, Firebase, and services like that. And so they wrote a book about architecting a video platform, and that's very much from experience. That one is called Serverless Architectures, and it's written by Pete Sparsky and Sam Kroonenberg. And then there are a bunch of different tutorial sites. I have tutorials on serverlesscode.com. And there's also a bunch of video courses available as well. Serverlessstack.com is another good one. It just takes you through building a little React application on top of Lambda and API Gateway.
Yeah, I know Serverless Stack. That's a great, great, great tutorial.
Could you just run through real quick some of the common naming conventions that Amazon or AWS uses, like S3 and EC2, and like what those mean, and not just like how you'd use them, but like give just like a general description as to what they are.
Yeah, no doubt. It can kind of come across as Greek the first couple times. So when you're using Lambda, some common services you're going to be talking to are things like S3, which is simple storage service. And what that is, it lets you store blobs of data behind what is basically a file name. And the key thing about S3 is you're only paying for what you use, and you can always access your data back really, really quickly. And then you're also going to probably use DynamoDB, which is a NoSQL database. So it's like a key value store, and it has some querying capabilities. And EC2 is their servers as a service offering. So it just creates virtual machines for you and runs them. So when I say serverless, usually that means you're not running your own EC2 instances. But it's good to know what that means when people say EC2.
Right.
And then SNS we already talked about, which is simple notification service. Then the last one I think I want to bring up is API Gateway, which is a way of taking your Lambda functions, which is your custom code, and exposing them as a REST API out to the world. So if you're using JavaScript from your front end, you would call back over HTTP or HTTPS, and that goes through API Gateway and then gets to your Lambda function.
With all of these tools, what's needed as a beginner?
As a beginner, I think the very core is Lambda, obviously, to run your code, and then choose the services that integrate with the right event sources for you. So let's say that you're making a web application. The two things that you need are Lambda and API Gateway. And then after you've learned to use those, you're going to have to add a data store. So if your event source is API Gateway and your runtime is Lambda, then your data store could be DynamoDB. So those would be like the three sort of services you need to glue together to get your web application going. If you want to make a more like infrastructure-driven application, or let's say you want to make a voice skill like for Amazon Alexa, then you would need to know Lambda, you would need to know Lex, which is the thing that lets you process language, and then you would need to understand the Alexa marketplace. So it depends what you're trying to do, but you really don't have to feel like you need to learn everything at once. So you want to start with just the things that you need. And for people getting started, I really recommend the serverless framework as your first starting point, because it gives you a smaller language to express what you want. So it's very simple in the serverless framework to say, give me an HTTP endpoint that accepts GETs, and then link it to this JavaScript function or Python function if you like Python instead.
All right. So what languages can I use?
Lambda supports a pretty wide range of languages. It supports Java, C#, JavaScript, obviously, and Python. And those are the four languages that are supported. But you can also get other languages to run. Like that static site generator that I use is written in Go, but you can copy the binary into your Lambda function and make Lambda run that. It's just not going to be running Go by default, if that makes sense.
So Go compiles to binary, some sort of executable?
Yep, that's exactly right. So Go will compile an executable, and then you zip up that executable, and you write a little tiny JavaScript wrapper around it to invoke the executable. And then you'd upload that. So even though you might write almost entirely Go, you would need a teeny bit of JavaScript to make it work.
All right. So let's say I'm building an app by myself. Before, I would probably need to hire a team, an ops team and everything. But how much ops work do I have to do if I'm building a solo app?
So the first answer is it doesn't get rid of operations. You're not running EC2 instances, so you're going to have a much easier time in a lot of ways. So you're not going to have to deal with operating system level stuff. You're not going to have to patch. all that's taken care of for you inside of Lambda, which is great. So that saves you a bunch of time. And as a solo person, you do still have to worry about your database. So what database are you using? That's also a developer concern, because what API do you want to use to talk to your database? And then once you've got your database set up, you have to make sure that that's being scaled correctly for your usage. So if you're using DynamoDB, that's just turning the knob for how many write capacity units you have on that database. But if you're using something like RDS, which is Amazon's relational database service, which will let you run like MySQL, you have to tune the instance size and make sure that you're not overusing your database. Because Lambda can scale up as high as you want, but if you have a small database and all of these Lambda functions hit your database at once, your database is going to fall over and you'll be inaccessible. Even though Lambda was fine with that scale, your backing store wasn't. So there's a lot of setup you have to do in terms of picking your database, making sure it's the right size for your traffic. But Lambda itself, the operations burden is tiny. So you're going to be using something like the serverless framework to upload your code, and that will deploy the Lambda functions and hook them up. So the comparison between that versus writing your own Rails app and then having it installed and putting it in an auto-scaling group and doing all this other stuff that you need to run an application when you're in charge of the EC2 instances is just gone. So you can have pretty feasible quote-unquote teams that are actually one person supporting the entire application.
Right. So I've got a real-world question here for you. I've followed the serverless stack tutorial, and it's working. It's serverless stack basically allows you to log in, register, and upload notes and images, and it stores the images text inside of a DynamoDB table, and it stores the images inside of S3. Now, I want to build on top of that and build a very simple social network. So I was wondering, do I store the extra user information inside of a DynamoDB table, or do I start going into Postgres RDS?
Yeah, so that depends. I mean, the answer is always it depends, right? So it depends on you as a developer. So if you are really comfortable writing SQL queries and you like doing that, that's how you like to work, then I would look at setting up RDS, because it's all about what you as a developer are going to be able to program against best. If you want to use DynamoDB, you can do that. One thing about DynamoDB is that your data model becomes very important, because it's mostly a key value store. So you have to think about what queries you're going to do first before you start storing your data. Because it's not like in a Postgres, you can add indexes later and make things fast. In DynamoDB, it's much harder to do that.
So basically, one of the things I want to do is I want to be able to link other users to other users, and I want to have users have different skill sets, but also those skill sets, I don't really want to, I guess with DynamoDB, you're going to duplicate a lot of data, right? Because you imagine a user, and then each user has those skills saved within the object. You can't really link to them like a many-to-many table.
Yeah, so that's harder because in DynamoDB, you can't do things like have a many-to-many relationship without making a separate mapping table. So you could do something like you have a table of users, and then each user has a list of skills. And then you have a second DynamoDB table that has every skill, and then each skill has its own list of all of the users.
That's not possible, then?
No, it is possible, but you would have to make a separate table, and it's not automatic, so you have to do a lot of the mapping stuff in code.
All right.
And the syncing when changes are made, you have to be synced to both table or to both documents, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it's not like a Postgres setup where you have a many-to-many relationship and then you can have a view that, you know, does the mapping. DynamoDB just doesn't have that feature. So if you're thinking that you're going to need a lot of different kinds of complex relationships, I would probably recommend setting up an RDS database, because it's much easier to start and then kind of expand and explore your data model with SQL than it is in Dynamo, because in Dynamo it's hard to go back and change things, because there's fields that have names that are set as your index keys, and you can't change that after the table is created. So to change those, you have to make a new table, transfer all your data, and then keep going with that. So there's a lot more work involved in changes with DynamoDB than Postgres, where you can just add an index.
Okay, so I don't think it would get that complicated, then do you think it would be pretty easy to just to go with DynamoDB out of the box and get a thing built?
Yeah, absolutely. So it absolutely be faster. And then the other nice thing about Dynamo is, compared to RDS, you're managing less stuff, because you're not doing like an instance size. With DynamoDB, you can say, DynamoDB, give me 5 write capacity units. But if I'm using those up, scale up to add write capacity units. And so your database can now auto scale with demand, which is really cool. And as a company, that saves you a lot of money, because you're not paying for database capacity that you don't use.
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah, so DynamoDB auto-scaling is really cool.
Well, I guess I'll just stick with DynamoDB then and see how far I get.
Yeah, there's a lot of good resources. I'll give you some links to put in the show notes if people are interested in sort of starting DynamoDB, getting stuff going. But the big thing that you have to remember is that it's not like SQL, where you can go back and add more indexes later so much. And so when you're designing your table, you have to think really hard about your data model ahead of time.
Okay.
So I had a question regarding the difference between serverless framework and Zeitz now. Do you have any opinion as to what a developer should reach for when they're thinking about grabbing one of these tools, so serverless versus now?
So there's a lot of these tools. So there's serverless framework, there's Claudia.js, there's Sparta, there's Apex, there's obviously Zeitz now, and there's a whole bunch more. The way that I recommend people start is to try and look at these tools and figure out what their needs are, and if there's any that obviously meet their needs, go with that. So if, for example, you know that you're going to be integrating with the rest of your company's app that's running on EC2, Lambda with serverless framework is probably the way to go, just because you're going to be running in the same data centers, you're going to be on the same networks, you're going to be able to share IAM users and things. Staying inside of that AWS ecosystem is going to be a big deal. Zeitz now seems to be a lot more for small applications, although I have not used it, so this might just be totally baloney. But it seems like I want to hook a function up to an HTTP endpoint, and they don't have a lot of surrounding services. Like Cognito is AWS's user pool system. That doesn't exist in Zeitz setup.
Right.
It took me quite a long time to get my head around all that user pools and stuff like that, but following through the serverless stack tutorial, eventually it sort of clicked and kind of all makes sense to me now.
Yeah, being able to outsource auth is also a big deal. I actually, one of the other companies that I mentioned, or I haven't mentioned them, but when I was talking about all the companies with function as a service things, one of them is actually Auth0. So they started doing foreign authentication for sites, so you could do Facebook login, all that stuff. And now they actually also offer a function as a service called WebTask. So you can take information, and it's authenticated with people's Facebook logins, and then do stuff based on that. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I think we're nearing the end, but is there anything else that people should check out, and how can people reach you with questions and just to say?
So obviously the serverless stack tutorial, I really like to point people to, because it's just a great entry point for sort of your boilerplate application. The other thing would be for finding me, I'm ryan@serverlesscode.com if you want to email me, or you can just do @ryan_sb on Twitter, and I'm on both those. So hit me up if you have any questions or if you need anything. And then serverlesscode.com, I have a bunch of tutorials for people that are getting started.
Well, great. Thanks very much, Ryan. I'll have to re-listen to this this podcast several times, because I think I learned some things.
Right on. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And thank you, listener, for listening to Learn With Us. You can find us on Twitter at Learn With Us Pod, and give us a 5-star review in iTunes. If it's a 4-star review, please don't bother. And we'll see you next time.
See you, everybody.